And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. No! Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, when Count Dooku calls upon the Night Sisters seeking a replacement for Ventress, she and her kin seizes the opportunity to exact revenge. There will be manslinging, me trying to do Hunger Games stuff, and Darth Maul wannabes. We're talking about monsters this week. How you doing, Chris?
Good. Hey, remember last week? We were talking about how you were like, this would be a great mashup for when the bodies hit the floor and it's raining men.
Yeah.
And I kind of scoffed and said, I don't think you'll find that on YouTube. And you did.
I did, and it was terrible.
It's terrible.
It was so terrible.
I've got 2 weeks between when this we record this and when it's out. I'm going to see if I can get my shit together. I'll see if I can make my own version of it.
There's a bajillion songs with the word monster in it, so I think you'll be okay for this one.
Yeah.
The one that keeps coming to my mind, there's a band called Skillet, which is one of those bands that, like, just falls into my love of really shitty mid-2000s rock. It's so catchy, and I hate to admit it, but I love, like, super shitty mid-2000s rock. But they have a song called Monster. And that's what I keep thinking about until I wrote Darth Maul Wannabes, and then I just started singing Wannabe by Spice Girls. If you want to be my monster, you got to get punched in the face. Ventress beating up everyone, because that's the way it is. His story from A to Z. If you want to run with me, you got to listen carefully.
Wow.
I just started like singing Wannabe and then making up my own version. Be Ventress's monster. So, yeah. There's plenty of songs titled Monster. I'm sure I have at least four.
Yeah, there's a Steppenwolf song called Monster.
There's some song that was on Guitar Hero that was called Monster.
There's an REM album called Monster.
Let's see. I'm just going to open my music and write in Monster and see how many songs I have that are titled Monsters. A lot of them are Whistler Rock songs. There's bands called Of Monsters and Men that I have full albums of.
There's Monster Magnet. That's a band from Seattle.
There's a Doctor Who song called Monster Bosa. I have a song from Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban called Monster Books and Bogarts. So you got plenty of things to choose from. I have songs from a band called Uncle Monster Face, which is amazing. I miss Uncle Monster Face. They were so good.
Were they the ones with the puppet faces?
Yeah.
I remember seeing pictures of you with them in the early days of Two True Freaks.
They have great songs like the Gary Gygax song.
Yeah.
And
I know what I did. I did a Photoshop, I think, for one of your early Hope of All Trades involving them.
Mm-hmm. And they have another great song for Super Mario called I'm Sorry But Your Princess Is in Another Castle. And there's another one called Samus Aran, You're the Man.
I know a band called the Worm Quartet that
did a song called R2-D2 Lives in My Butt.
R2-D2 lives in my butt. R2-D2 lives in my butt. R2-D2 lives in my butt. R2-D2 lives in my butt.
My other favorite.
You have
one,
to see it live though to get the full effect of that song. Let's just say it involves microphones being held up to butts.
My other favorite Uncle Monster Face song is called Save the Superheroes, where they have, which is about trying to save Batman from space. And they said, it's okay, Batman, you're in a comic. Just take the speech bubble and put it on your head. Like, great, like, little lines like that. I paraphrase it. It's much more clever when they say it. But, yeah, you won't have any trouble finding music this week. It just depends. I have some. I have the soundtrack, because I'm going to bring this up in my notes, because I talk about how Savage pretty much turns into the Frankenstein monster. And I have the soundtrack from the Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller version of Frankenstein, and they have this fantastic song called Come Scientist Destroy. Oh, it's so good. Anything that I can do just to show off love of actors that I love, because I do that all the time. Totally sent fan mail to two actors this week, and I hope they get it. Because that's my life. My next letter is going to be to Lin-Manuel Miranda, so let's do it. I'm a fangirl. It's okay. I send about 3 letters a year to Michael Sacca.
You never work for What back. The Fangirl, so there you go, you know.
That is true. I've sent about 3 letters a year to Michael Sacca, never heard back. And I just sent one to Colin O'Donoghue and Sean McGuire. So let's see how that goes, even though I just realized that Sean McGuire is not on Once Upon a Time anymore. So he might not get his.
Well, we'll start worrying when you start going through their garbage. That's when I might start, you know, that's when Two True Freaks might have an intervention. But up until then...
No, I would never do that. I'm very well aware that they're humans with feelings and abilities and private lives, and they're just doing jobs. Really cool jobs, but jobs.
Yeah. Doesn't mean you can't check out their garbage every once in a while. Just to see what's up.
Because that's what my life is, garbage.
Oh, awesome. That's the spirit.
It's celebrity garbage. That's my life. Well, I'm ready to get started on this monster of an episode.
Yes. Well, it's definitely a monster of a episode for you, because you wrote yourself some dialogue here.
Yeah, I did.
Coming up.
Why do I do this?
You did it to yourself, Hope.
I always do it to myself.
Just remember that, yeah.
All right, so let's get started. Monster is the 57th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on January 14th, 2011. It was written by Katie Lucas and directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Some extra information for you. Savage Opress is voiced by Clancy Brown, who is also the voice of Ryder Azzardi in Star Wars Rebels. Some of Clancy's other works include one of Chris's favorites, Starship Troopers, where he was the drill instructor.
Yes, and he was great in that.
Yep. And
I thought his name sounded familiar.
Mm-hmm. He was also in Shawshank Redemption, Highlander, the cartoons Justice League and Justice League Unlimited as Lex Luthor, and SpongeBob SquarePants as Mr. Krabs from the beginning to present. I was like, Mr. Krabs and Savage Opress, that's a wide range. So, anyway, something I forgot to mention last week with Mother Talzin's voice actress Barbara Goodison is she's best known for voicing Rita Repulsa from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And in the episode featurette, Dave Filoni says, I think here's a case where you can see that the fans love Darth Maul. Loved him. George brought up this story with the writers that he wanted to bring this character back. We were all like, well, that's going to be difficult because you cut him in half. And that's pretty hard to come back from. And that was really funny because in hindsight, they ended up bringing him all back. But this featurette was before that. So what we decided instead was that there had to be others of these guys. This is the village, according to George Lucas, that is where Darth Maul would have been from. These guys are his kin, his brothers to some degree. This is where Ventress goes to find a warrior to use as her pawn to kill Count Dooku. Savage is a pawn. He's a pawn in a terrible story where Feral, his brother, really gets used by the Night Sisters to prove loyalty to them. They make him kill him. It adds another dimension to these guys. They're not all crazed lunatics with tattoos and horns. They have feelings. They have emotions. It makes them more dynamic, more dimensional as characters. They would fight for each other as warriors, as brothers. Savage gets manipulated and transformed into this hulking monster. He loses a lot of his identity in the process. He becomes a pawn to Ventress. What's interesting is, does Ventress see or does she not see what she's doing to Savage is what Dooku has done to her. Ventress has a long way to go yet before she cleanses out the evil, this poison that the Sith have put in her. Now she's a little instrument of destruction that's now not just destroying her own life, but destroying others around her. That is the nature of the dark side. It is a destroyer. It is not a creator. We see that scenario play out in this series of episodes. I just love Ventress being called a little instrument of destruction, because I just imagined her like a tiny little tuba, just like, burr, burr, burr.
That sounds like every toddler in the world, basically.
I know, right? Oh my god, if she wanted to be the most annoying instrument in the world, she would be one of those recorders that you would get in school.
Yeah, toddlers are little Sith, too.
Oh, god.
They're little amoral bastards, if not amoral, like, immoral.
Yeah, totally, like... What instrument do you think Asajj Ventress would be?
What musical instrument?
Yeah.
Oboe, maybe? She's sort of built like an oboe.
I think she would be some sort of like stringed instrument, like a viola or a violin. Something that had that you can like get those like really salsa-y kind of tones like that. That's what a fiddle sounds like to me, I guess.
Yeah.
So... you know who's also a little immoral bastard?
Oh,
I just say that's becoming one of my favorite parts of the week is how do I get this planetoid?
I just found a bunch of old clips back in the old days when Scott Gardner and I used to do Clone Wars episodes on Star Wars Monthly Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have the Irredeemable Shag do all the, he would just record all the Yoda platitudes for us.
So no
I have all
way.
These, yeah, I have all these Shag. Hey guys, it's Shag here. Here's my, except he wasn't doing it in bed.
You knew need to, like, just put those in a second track and just put it up as a special, like, 0.5 episode?
I know. I wish I would have known earlier because it was for a lot of the earlier episodes, so we could have actually used them for some of the earlier episodes. But yeah, I'll don't worry. I'll drag those out. And,
I don't know. I kind of like us doing the whole in bed thing.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll just drag them out to... So it just gives us another chance to mock Shag in public. I like doing that.
This is the Irredeemable Shag, recording a sound file for the freaks. Much freak I sense in you. Indeed.
I like humiliating Shag in public, too. It's one of my favorite pastimes.
Yeah, it's a great hobby.
I haven't done it yet this year, though. I need to get on that.
Get a Who True Freaks on there. You get plenty of chances to slap him down.
Slap him down.
All right, Yoda. You ready? You limber? You ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
Did you do all your stretches?
Oh, yes. Yoda had a rolfing session today.
A what?
Rolfing.
Roll on the floor laughing, okay.
Look it up. Okay.
That was like Yoda's like cigarette laugh.
Yeah, cigarette. Evil is not born, it is taught in bed.
Oh,
Yoda's voice is extra juicy today.
I was about to say, it sounded like Yoda just drank down like a whole bottle of whiskey or something.
Yeah, well.
Oh.
Nobody really knows what he's drinking. Hey, Yoda might get drunk off swamp water for all we know.
Yeah, I got a note about this platitude. It sucks. This is the most generic platitude they've used so far.
Well, they're not teaching. Like, if you apply it to oppress Savage, it isn't really taught as much as it is sort of enhanced. You know, they sort of enhance it in him rather than teach him to him. They sort of like just build it into him with magic. So.
And it's the whole like evil's not born, it's made thing has been used so many times in so many shows. It's like the theme of Regina in Once Upon a Time. Like, it's not a new thing. So like this
right.
is the most. I would have rather this platitude be something about, like, maybe, like, brotherhood or, like, something.
It's splitting hairs, but this platitude works better when you talk about, like, hate. Hate,
yeah.
Like, hate isn't something you're born with, it's something you're taught. That's like, absolutely true. This is just sort of, meh.
It doesn't really apply to Ventress, either.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, this is the most generic platitude. This was one that where they, like, were reaching down in the rabbit hat, and they were, like, digging from the bottom, and they pulled out the first one they found.
Although teaching evil in bed is probably pretty awful, but probably pretty hot and sexy.
I bet I could open one of those fortune cookies and find a platitude that was better. Just a random fortune cookie.
Although, if you, like, met somebody and then, like, and then you get, like, into an intimate situation and they go, I'm going to teach you evil now, you probably better should run.
Yeah, I know. That's like Palpatine bedroom talk. I heard I got you drinking just now. I heard it.
But would it be funny if Palpatine is like, now I'll teach you the true meaning of evil, ha ha ha. And he's like, puts you over his knee and starts like half-assedly spanking you. There, ha 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 ha. You're like, wait, what?
That's
pretty evil there, Palpy.
No.
You
call me master.
All right.
Let's move on.
You are... rise, Darth Muffin.
Darth Muffin.
All right, dude. Well,
what if there was someone that, like, one time had, like, a really dumb, like, Sith Lord name, but they were such a badass that, like, everybody started fearing that? Like, they're like, oh, God, kittens.
Darth Sparrow? What the hell is he gonna do?
Ride on ships and get drunk and pretend he's Johnny Depp?
Darth Fluffy.
Darth Fluff. Don't call me Fluffy.
It was a lady Jedi named, like, Darth Cindy or something like that.
Darth Cindy?
Darth Stella from The Office.
Or just, like, Darth Jessica or something.
Right.
Oh, my God. I would love to see, like, just, like, a little web series of, like, The Office, but done with,
my
like,
name's Darth person. Jessica now.
Or like Phyllis, who was like the lady that was like super nice on there, and she was just like got tired of it, so she just became Darth Phyllis or something. That'd be awesome.
Anybody could do that actually, and just yeah.
All right, that just reminded me when I was at work at Halloween, there was a guy just like trouncing around the mall as Kylo Ren, and like he was just walking around with his big ass lightsaber. And about every 20 minutes, we would see him walk by, and we'd be like, bye, Kylo.
we need a National Darth Day, where everybody goes to work as their Darth personality.
That would be awesome, actually.
Yeah.
I would be so
down for that. You have to come up with your Sith name and come into work, and that day you're Darth Crusher or whatever you are. You know, something suitably evil sounding.
That's a really good
Darth
idea.
Darth Tiffany.
I totally think we should hit up the 501st and be like, you guys should make Darth Day.
National Darth Day.
Maybe that would be May 6th, because that's usually a
change.org petition right there, people. Get on that.
But it could be like May the 6th, because you have May the 4th, Revenge of the 5th. May the 4th be with you. The 5th strikes back, and then Revenge of the 6th.
It would be June 6th, because it would be 6-6, Order 66.
No, but then it could be like with the whole May the 4th thing.
With the what?
May the 4th.
Yeah, May but the then you get movie. Yeah, but then you get two Star Wars themed months in a row. See
yes.
what I mean? You gotta spread out your Star Wars holidays, and pretty soon you got 12 of them, and then each holiday is each monthly Star Wars holiday becomes. Now I'm trying to remember what the hell those things are called that you get at Christmas time.
The advent calendars?
It'd be like, yeah, each month would be like an advent calendar countdown to the next Star Wars movie.
You know, on Twitter, a lot of people have like Tano Tuesdays, Anakin Mondays, Satine Sundays, stuff like that, and where they have different characters that are dedicated and they do it every week. But you're not on Twitter, so you don't know that.
No, I'm on it, but I'm not on it. I'm on it, but I'm not in it.
I'm smashing your statement. Standing on top of the like Twitter.
Shut up,
like,
Chris.
No, I just imagine you standing on top of like Twitter's main building in California, and you're just like, I'm on it, but I'm not in you. All right, so Act One.
Act One.
All right, so recapping last week's episode, Asajj Ventress tried to kill Count Dooku when he gave her the Bi Felicia of Death. She got pissed and went home to Dathomir. Which Mommy Talzin was like, here's two great lady fighters to help you. Go murder that guy. But Ventress and the women failed, and because we all know that Count Dooku makes it to episode 3. So Talzin has a plan to set up Dooku by giving him one of the males from Dathomir to be an apprentice because Palpatine liked that Darth Maul guy so much. So Dooku thinks that the Jedi are behind his assassination attempt and arrives on Dathomir. Dooku meets with Mother Talzin and talks about how he would really love the Night Sisters to reform old alliances and help out the Separatist cause for the Clone Wars. Mother Talzin looks done with this conversation before it even started. Mother Talzin's all like, "Nah, we're good with our evil Yaya sisterhood. I'm only paying a debt to you. When we're done, get the fuck off my planet. I never want to see your gross face again. Okay, thanks." Mother Talzin pulls some Harry Potter magic and makes Dooku drink, and they start on their business. She's all like, "So remember that dude Darth Maul? He came from this village on the other side of the planet, and there are other dudes like him. We can go get you one of those guys if you want, but they're not the easiest to control." Dooku is like, "Challenge accepted," and he leaves Dathomir. Ventress arrives with revives, and Mother Talzin is all like, "Our evil plan is working." And Ventress heads out to the far side of Dathomir to pick up a guy to help them out. What'd you think of Act 1?
I liked it a lot. It's funny, Dathomir, now they're working the blue aspect on Dathomir.
Mm-hmm.
Lot of blue in this part. And another Star Wars As You Wish. The evil people in Star Wars love to say As You Wish.
Well, we talked about it last week. They're all fans of The Princess Bride.
Yeah, it's...
They all sit around and they watch it together.
But only the evil guys are watching The Princess Bride, which is weird.
Well, the Jedis don't have feelings, so they don't have time for that.
And, the two things with Dooku. One, I think he should be able to sense Ventress there, unless, like, being in her home magic area can shield her or something like that, you know. I mean, he's trained her, you know. You'd think that he would be able to be like,
The only thing that I could think of is that this is a dark side planet, and it's so, like, heavily dark side that it's just, like,
You're not gonna pick up on another person or whatever.
Because everybody there is seeped in the dark side.
Another thing with Dooku is, why would you want another Maul? Anyway, Darth Maul didn't really, like, perform too well. He took out Qui-Gon, but that was about it. And then he got sliced
in
half.
And Maul was Palpatine's assistant, not Dooku's, so.
Right. But, you know, I'm sure Dooku knew of his exploits. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. Well, he seems to in this, you know.
You know what? Qui-Gon and Dooku were friends. I think at some point, like, somewhere they mentioned that they were friends. And so I was like, why would you want something that killed your friend?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they were friends, but he's not friends with the Jedi anymore. You know, like, he was playing that with Obi-Wan in episode 2, too. Like, "Hey, old buddy," but, yeah, he would have definitely had Obi-Wan, you know, he put Obi-Wan out to be killed, so, you know. Ventress's trip to Mantown. How Mantown is Mantown? They're just fighting in the streets. they might as well just be butting their heads together like bulls, just like, bruh, bruh. And it's, everybody's fighting, and Ventress comes in, and as far as, like, a kid's cartoon or a cartoon show goes, this is some of the most S&M shit I've ever seen.
We're not there yet.
Really? That I thought that was all in the first part. I'm just talking like Ventress's get up and her ship, and right? She gets to Mantown in this first part, doesn't she?
I haven't read it, but you can go on.
Oh. I'm just saying. Yeah, we were talking about matriarchal societies. This is definitely a matriarchal society. Even though they're running stags in Mantown, they snap to attention when Ventress shows up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what did I write? All my notes about Mantown are in Act 2. Oh.
I've been going by the commercial fade-outs.
I didn't have commercial fade-outs, so I just ended it when the story switched.
Oh, okay.
So, that means you're not listening to me when I read.
I am.
No, you're not. You lie.
Well, you have her going to Mantown at the end of the last sentence.
I'm just giving you a hard time, love.
Stop picking on me.
I'm sorry. It's okay. I'm a pudgy little nerdy girl. You could probably take me.
You're gonna lead me to drink. It's ginger ale. That's all they'll let me drink here. I hate them.
The thing is that I know you've been drinking wine at night, so I thought you just opened up a can of wine, and that like idea sounds like so nasty to me. Like,
I think they do make wine in pop top cans, though.
I know. That's just like a weird thing to me.
Yeah, that's more like my nightly tonic. I don't even feel no alcohol effects from that wine because I've usually just eaten a nice big dinner beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but that's about all. That's not about all my notes for part one. I'm really digging that we're getting back into the visual Clone Wars of where they're like playing whole color schemes in episodes, and they're like play, and it's got to mean something because I mean Dathomir was like red last episode, and this episode it's blue, which is usually like kind of the opposite of red in a cooler color.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. It's like they're cooling everything down. So it's because revenge is a dish best served cold. How's that for a convenient platitude?
For me, like, I kind of noticed that the red, like, the deep, deep reds are always around the Night Sisters, but when they do get the Man Town, it looks just a normal town. It looks like they could be hanging out at Hondo's place or something.
Yeah.
So, like, definitely, like, they're trying to put on that, like, there's more dark side with the Night Sisters. Well, like, you know, any of Savage's crew could, like, run with Hondo and be fine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they're just sort of a standard village of savages, basically.
Yeah, with
semi-savages.
Feelings.
It's like a pirate town or something, you know. It's got to be worse because it's all men. It's got to be just like pure, like, angry testosterone all the time.
Yeah. My notes for Act 1. Dooku's ship sort of looks like one of those energy swords from Halo. I don't know if you know what those look like, but it also kind of reminded me of a masturbation sleeve that guys use to jerk off.
All right, I don't know what either of those look like, but now I do, I guess.
No, it was just this morning. I'm like, I read this week's Ojoy Sex Toy, and they was reviewing a masturbation sleeve, and it was one that like opens up so you could see the inside. And I swear to God, it looks just like freaking Dooku's ship. I saw that, I was like, oh.
There's got to be a name for Dooku's ship. They got to name that product, whatever it is. You know, the Executor, or whatever.
Yeah.
What a sexy name that is. A masturbation sleeve. They used to call them pocket pussies back in the day. Doesn't that have much... It's cruder, but it's got alliteration. A masturbation sleeve just sounds like something you're handed at the hospital, you know, because they need a sample.
Well,
it's not something you get romantically involved with, you know what I mean?
I'm looking at the Ojoy 6 toy one, to the one that reminded me of Dooku's ship, and it's called the Flip Zero by Tenga.
Called the what?
The Flip Zero.
Flip Zero. Oh, it sounds like a phone.
So some of the other notes. Talzin mentions that she has a debt to repay to Count Dooku. I'm wondering if that's something in the Legacy lore, because they haven't mentioned anywhere in the canon, to my knowledge, of a debt that she owes Dooku. The only thing it might be is in Son of Dathomir, which I haven't read yet. So, I mean, it might be in that, but to my knowledge, I don't know of any debt that Talzin owns to Dooku.
She might just be making it up as a way to cloud the... I was thinking that, too, because it could be, you know, a debt to the Jedi, or to the Sith, or even, you know, maybe not specifically to Dooku. And that's her way of like, because she can't seem, like, too happy to set this whole thing up. So mm-hmm. I think she's making it so it doesn't look like she's as much like she's getting revenge, that she heard that he lost an apprentice and is now using this as an opportunity to wash her hands of the Sith, you know?
That's true, because we mentioned last week in the episode information that Palpatine went to Dathomir to train under her, and that's when he found Maul and took him. So maybe it was something that had to do with that.
Right.
And this just makes it seem
less suspicious. It puts her in kind of a little hostile position to Dooku, which would be what he would expect more of them.
Yeah.
So, So she's basically saying, yeah, I'm not doing this because I like you. I'm doing this because now I don't have to worry about ever dealing with you again. And, yeah, it doesn't seem as much like a revenge plot or a possible revenge plot.
Also, when Mother Tazen made a drink for Dooku, why didn't she just poison him then?
Yeah, it's risky. If it doesn't work, then you play your hand, you know, and you have to kill him. You'd have to fight him and kill him right then. And Dooku's shown he's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
He's not somebody to mess with. I was thinking the same thing, and I'm like, that was a whole little trust thing that went on there, where Dooku's like, yeah, it's not in her interest to poison me, and her being like, yeah, it's not in my interest to poison you. Oh, good, you didn't poison me. We can move on.
Yeah.
And if they poisoned him, then he'd go, aha, this is a trap, you know. And that's a classic Jedi trick, and I wouldn't see it not being a tactic of the Sith either, to walk into traps, to snare traps, to find out, you know. Someone's trying to kill you with a trap, then you might as well snare it and find out who's trying to kill you and get it over, you know, get it over with. So I think that was my little bit of head dancing that I did to make that fit. Because I thought the exact same thing.
Also, I hate the hood that Asajj wears this entire episode. Maybe it's just because my cat just recovered from surgery, but it looks like a cone on her head, like a cone of shame.
It looks like a cone, and it looks like the way hoodies fit on little kids. It reminds me of a little kid with a hoodie on.
And she's a warrior. It doesn't make sense because it's completely cutting off her peripheral vision.
Yeah, but she's being on the down low. She's dead, you know?
Yeah, but I hate that hood because, like, why are you wearing that when you go to the man village? Because you're fighting a bunch of dudes you can't see out of, like, other than, like, the right in front of your face. So I don't
know. She doesn't have to see him.
I know. I just hate it. I think it looks dumb. It looks like a cone of shame. It's a cone of shame. And my last note for Act 1 is, Dooku, love, I know that you're running a war and all, but you really trust the Night Sisters to pick out a warrior for you. I mean, I know it's the plot of the episode, but if you were smart, you would have, like, went with them to oversee your personal assassin.
Yeah, no, but he's not a horse trainer, you know? He's letting the horse trainer, he's showing his trust of them, I guess, by saying, you know, go do your, it's like coming to the Kamino Inns and saying, give me your best clone. You're not going to go in there and meddle with their DNA because they're the DNA masters, I guess.
I don't know.
Dooku being the kind of guy he is, you'd think he'd want to stand over the stadium as they chose, you know, and watch the whole thing and be like, I like the cut of that one's jib, you know.
He did that in, I think it was season 5, like the box episode, where he's trying to pick bounty hunters for a mission. Wow, and he stands over them and watches all the bounty hunters. And I was just like,
This just made me realize why the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, the original Clone Wars cartoons, aren't canon. Because it had a whole sequence, I believe, with Ventress, where she shows up to train with Dooku, and and she shows up as an adult among many, you know, potential, you know, flunkies to fight it out. And Dooku has them all fight it out, and Ventress is the winner of all of it. So that definitely conflicts with him taking her as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably why it ended up not. Because I was trying to think what wouldn't have fit in Clone Wars, and that's the only thing that doesn't fit, and that's still out. That's still from the books, but I forgot all about that. I gotta go back and watch those again, just out of curiosity, even before
we're totally
gonna
do those as our next commentaries, because I haven't seen them since probably 2003. So we'll get there, and I have access to them, all of them now, so it'll be easy. But that's all I had for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to go on to Act 2.
This
is the one that's going to get you, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody.
I'm hydrated now.
Take a seat. Yeah, I hope you have some honey in that while you're drinking coffee. So.
No, I also have ice water so I can, liquidate my throat. Liquidate?
Don't liquidate your throat.
Ah, shut my mouth. Okay, here we go. Act two. I'm so excited for this, though. Ventress treks across the planet, and it must not be a very big planet because she gets to the other side of it pretty fast. To find the man village, the dudes look on with some fear, others are ready for the challenge, and she's met by Brother Viscus, who is in charge of the dudes. He orders the men to line up for her to expect them. Here we meet Savage Opress and his brother Feral, who isn't actually that feral. He's sort of a tame dude, which makes him adorable and a cinnamon roll, and I want to protect him at all costs. Ventress walks through the men, calling them specimens and slapping them about, force choking them, weeding out the ones she doesn't deem good enough for her cause. Brother Viscus and other men totally go along with it because this is normal life on Dathomir. She picks out a small handful of men, including Savage and Feral. She sets up a series of tests for them. There will be three, and the one who survives them will be her champion. So let the 75th annual Hunger Games begin! I really wish I could do a really good Caesar Flickerman voice from Hunger Games, but I'm gonna try. Ha ha! Welcome to the Hunger Games! In the first event, it's Asajj Ventress fighting off the hordes of men! This will be exciting, folks. We know Ventress has years of Sith training and has held off up to two Jedi at a time. How will she fare with a group of eight mini-balls? The men look scared, brandishing their weapons. What is this? An alliance is forming between Savage and Feral. That's a risky move there, Chris. Let's see if it pays off for them. Ooh, it looks like Ventress is plowing through the candidates in the first event. Savage Opress is holding his ground and dodging her axe-throwing abilities. Ouch! It looks like he took one hard in the face. What's this? Another man threw a spear at Ventress. Wow, she caught it one-handed and plowed it right back into his torso. Down the death cannons for him, because he is super dead! Ha ha ha! You can feel the excitement, folks. It's coming right off the screen in front of us. Feral is on the ground. Oh my, what a turn of events! Savage is exposing his alliance with his brother. He chooses not to fight the Witch of the Mist Ventress in order to aid his kin. This can't end up good, folks. I don't see a good strategy at all for them. What will Ventress do in response? She punches out Savage, ending the first event of the Dathomir Hunger Games. We move on to our second event. The crowd watches eagerly on the edges of their seat. Looks like Ventress has taken on a weapon for this round, a scythe on the end of a chain. This round will be fought completely in the dark. The lights are flicked off, folks. Silence has befallen the battlefield. Will these men survive the test? Probably not, but that's why it's called the Hunger Games! The second event has started! Ventress vanishes into the dark. Her blade sings, echoing against the terrain of the battlefield. The four remaining men band together in the middle. Normally I would advise safety in numbers, but now they're all easy targets. You know what I always say, dying together means you're not dying alone! Oh, her blade flies out of the darkness. One of the men is killed on the spot. Only three remain. This is getting exciting, folks. The death cannons are practically singing in my ears. A blur flies by. Ventress has decapitated a second competitor. Beautiful form, Ventress, beautiful form. Only Savage and Feral remain. To think that there's still one more event. Never in my broadcast career following the Hunger Games have I ever seen such beautiful display of brutality. This is a game for all the ages. With her blade singing, Ventress swoops in. Oh, what is this? Savage Opress dodges out of the way, protecting his brother. Their alliance might yet pay off for them, folks. Ventress impressed. Savage and Feral have moved on to the final round. In Event 3, the rules are different. The ground will be constantly moving up and down in pillars. The only rule is the same as every Hunger Game. You must survive! Looks like Savage and Feral are going to work well as a team. Will their combined efforts stop the Wailing Banshee from destroying them? Let's hope not. Bring on the third quarter quarrel. The brothers are hiding in and out in the moving pillars. I doubt that this will pan out for them. Ooh, Ventress has found them. She is giving chase. She's right on their heels. The brothers have taken the high ground. Oh, but what is this? Feral has fallen from the top of the pillar. The team is separated. I sense a quick death coming for him, folks. We'll pause for a quick commercial break from our local sponsors. Come down to the Happy Robot Massage Parlor on Coruscant, where they will treat your droid like a real person. It's R2-D2 approved. Back to the action, folks. Feral is alone, facing Night Sister Asajj Ventress. You can practically smell the thick stench of death in the air. Or it might just be my socks. Oh, Ventress has found Feral. She cornered him, and throwing punch after relentless punch. This looks like to be the end of her, the brother. Oh, she's using her signature move, the Force Choke of Death. This skill has been used by many Siths, including her former master, Count Dooku. This should do it! This should end the third quarter quarrel! What is this? Savage has come out of nowhere! He's hiding Ventress to save his brother! Oh, he's hiding Ventress to save his brother! Such niceties rarely work on the battlefield! This might just save the man yet! He's thrown her to the ground! What a turn of events! Can he actually beat the witch? Savage is claiming his allegiances to his brother! This might be a stupid move, my friends. Let's see what happens. Oh, it's one-on-one. Savage versus Ventress. This battle is heating up. They are evenly matched. I need to fan myself. It's too hot for me to handle. Who will come out on top? Oh, another twist has occurred. Savage is begging Ventress to spare his brother. This is unheard of in the Hunger Games. He is volunteering. This is Katniss Everdeen all over again. He's volunteering as tribute. She is sending Feral away. She is sparing Feral. Oh, the humanity. Such rare humanity. Savage and Ventress are sparring again. Their hand-to-hand combat is evenly matched. Oh, but wait, folks. Looks like Ventress is starting to get the upper hand here, even with Savage taking the high ground, and with a roundhouse kick, it is over! This fight is done! Savage Ventress has survived the Deathmere Hunger Games! He pledges his alliance to Ventress! It is over! And I am your host, Caesar Flickerman, and until next year, Happy Hunger Games! Ha ha! And now back to your regularly scheduled summaries.
Jeez, you wanna
I'm good.
Take five and take a breath there? Jeez.
I'm fine. Anyway, with Savage victory, he leaves the village to go with Ventress back to the Night Sisters. Mother Talzin gets all feely when Savage arrives and gives her best Palpatine impression of good. And they start their dark ceremony to prepare of Savage for his new life. Ugh.
Well, that's like one of your longest summaries ever.
But was it good? That's
for,
the question.
For basically, like, that whole act was just a fight scene, basically, with a...
But was it good? That's the important
it
thing.
It was good. Thank you. I'm going to have to dig up some different soundtrack music for this one, for sure.
I request the sound of a cannon whenever someone dies. Because they use the cannons in Hunger Games. Woo! You go first. What do you think about two, Chris?
I was very surprised that they had to fight Ventress. I thought for sure they would have to fight each other. Mm-hmm. That's how I would determine the strongest. I mean, it's impressive that Ventress puts her neck on the line to determine the guys when she could just be like, "All right, fight each other," and someone'll be left. And you'll be the winner. That she could have just like sat back and wouldn't even had to break a sweat. So I thought that's a little, you know, I don't know. I imagine that's part of the rules of their world. So yeah, I'm impressed with that. That you gotta have some skin in the game when you're choosing a champion. There's some nice chanty music in there too. Nice evil chanty voice music.
To go with your whole thing about fighting. I have something just to go along with that. You know, ever seeing Maul in episode 1 and knowing what he can do from Clone Wars and Rebels, it's sort of weird to see how much weaker his brothers are in comparison, because Ventress is beating the shit out of a group of them. Not one, but a group of them, without even breaking a sweat. So even
yeah,
without
she's just picking them off without even really engaging with them for the most part until it gets...
But like even without Sith training, I always thought that they would stand more of a threat against her. But I'm wondering if they purposely train the females to be better warriors than the men.
These guys, Sith training, you can't just grab a big guy and train him to be a Sith, you know, or so it's almost like they had to take him and like fill him full of midichlorians or something, you know, to get that aspect of him, to get trained in that, whereas Ventress might have been force sensitive to start out with, or maybe all the sisters are, maybe all the women are force sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
But,
because we do know that she was force sensitive as a kid, because that's why her Jedi Master last week picked her up.
Yeah, I mean, I just figured she has the force, none of these guys have the force. They're all really sitting ducks. She's just got to determine who the strongest one is and not kill that one. You know, basically, she's just, you know, determining which one of them out of that. But I don't think any of them would make a threat to her for any length of time. Maybe, you know, for a second or two. But in general, I think she's pretty much got. That's all I really got on that act. It's pretty much just a big fight. I see you've got a lot.
And the thing is, like, all my notes are kind of connected. But I would hope so,
since it's all just sort of one scene.
Yeah, my only kind of, like, standalone note that I have is the one-on-one fight between Ventress and Savage is awesome. Like, them just pretty much just hand-to-hand going at it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just a really great one. My first one is, I'd like to know more details about how Dathomir society works. Like, what made them separate the tribes, like, between the men and the women? Why even separate them? What are their mating rituals like? Like, is there a courting thing, or do they just bring in the guys, sex them, and then kick them out again? Like,
snoo, snoo.
Yeah, snoo, snoo.
Time for snoo, snoo.
But I really just want to know more about Dathomirian society. The entire scene of Ventress lining up the men and looking them over, like living meatbags, is so reminiscent of the slave trade.
The slave trade, if you ever want to see the funny version of it, look at Mel Brooks's History of the World Part 1. There's a scene with Madeline Kahn checking out slave boys.
But it makes me wonder about the society even more and how it's set up. Because if the men are only used to make warriors... Or are the men only used to make warriors, or could they actually, like, get off the planet and go make lives for themselves? Like, do they have dreams, or are they only bred to serve the Night Sisters and be fighters? Like, I just want to know more, especially about the men's side, because we get so much of the Night Sisters, we really don't get much of the male side in comparison.
We get enough of the Night Sisters to sort of use our imaginations to figure out what's going on with them. These guys, yeah, you don't really get anything except that, you know, they live in a town full of men.
Yeah.
And they're hostile. They're just generally hostile.
Yeah, and
they're they're definitely subservient to the women. The women are it's definitely matriarchal society.
And what a nice change of pace that is. You know,
I guess.
No, it's just like 99.9% of the shows are like patriarchies. Like, you have the guy leader and everybody else under it. So it's, sorry, there's a plane flying overhead. But it's still like, it's so different to get a society like this and having it portrayed so differently, I guess is the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, starkly. But at the same time, it's a little counter because there's a matriarchal society, but it's flat out evil.
I know. And that's kind of the problem I have with it
flat out too, evil and exploitative of the, you know, it's almost like The Handmaiden's Tale in reverse, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah, totally. That's a really great example. Because I was thinking, I know historically in our world, there's a lot of Africa before, you know, white people invaded it, they actually had a lot of matriarchy societies, and a lot of their women were warriors and stuff, and they were successful and lived in peace, mm-hmm. and they like, led their tribes to be very profitable. So I kind of wish we would get, like, in comparison to the Night Sisters, like, a second matriarch society, just to see, like, this is how it would be different.
Well, the Night Sisters, I mean, like, metaphorically, they're very similar to, like, you know, because I think in, like, especially in early days of society, lots of, like, tribal societies were matriarchal. And in those days, you know, the women were the ones that held magic, because they had people come out of them, you know, and so that sort of like linked them really closely to nature and magic and creation. So, you know, that you have the matriarchal society, and all the women are witches, you know, And in a way, there's a sort of evil birthing ceremony coming up here.
Yeah.
Right now we saw the conception in this act.
Yeah. I kind of just wish they, like, some point in Clone Wars or Rebels, they just gave us another matriarch society to compare to the Clone Wars one. So not the only Clone Wars, like, matriarch that we have is evil. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to show, like, you know, just a peaceful example of a matriarch. I guess the closest we get is Satine, but not really, because she's just a duchess. That doesn't count. To go along with wanting more information about Dathomir, I also just want more background information on Feral and Savage, and, like, them growing up and stuff like that. Savage states that he will protect Feral as long as he lives. You totally get the sense that Feral is not a warrior. Like, he's been trained to fight, but he doesn't have that warrior heart. And more than likely, Savage has probably looked out for him growing up. So, just to spoil a little bit from the future episode, Savage has always been a character I just wanted more of, because I know where he goes and where he gets up to and where he ends. And so this is really the only episode that we get to see Savage's life, and, like, his daily life and his relationship with his kin and stuff like that. Really, after this episode, he's just a walking Frankenstein monster. Right. So I just want more of his life and his thoughts and his upbringing. And that's just something that we don't get in this episode. I just want to know.
And it's a missed opportunity, because we sort of didn't get anything about Darth Maul, and here was an opportunity to sort of not really fill that in for Darth Maul, but, you know, make up for that. You would at least get a history into Darth Maul's people or something like that.
Yeah, like, even if we just, like, started off, like, or had, like, just another, and I'll go way more into this in Act 3, because I have another very long note about that as well. But, yeah, I just really, really want that a lot, because that, like Darth Maul, we would be able to connect the two together.
That's sort of part of the one of the things about good fiction, though, is, you know, I'm trying to think of the word. I want to say intriguing, compelling fiction, is that sometimes you don't get everything, so you have to sort of, you know, you're just getting little pieces, so you have to use your imagination until maybe some future time where they fill in the blanks or whatever.
Yeah.
They have 22 minutes, so, but yeah, I would have definitely liked to have seen a little, I mean, just from what we've saw, we've definitely got enough to fill in, like, where we could sort of imagine what they'd be like as kids or something. But yeah, if we got a little more of what their life was like, we would definitely feel for them a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I've always been one of those fans that I like some, like, openness to, like, so I can imagine, but at the same time, I want, there are certain details I just want.
Basically, Savage could have been a really interesting character, but they just sort of don't develop him, and he just becomes, yeah, Frankenstein. More of a steroid Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Not Frankenstein on steroids, but, like, somebody made into a Frankenstein by steroids.
That is totally, like, the majority of my Act 3 notes. So, yeah.
This episode was a serious commentary on the use of human growth hormone.
Yeah. Okay, so I got one more thing to say. And if you don't want a spoiler for Son of Dathomir, you might want to just skip ahead a few minutes. So just heads up. Ready? Here we go. So last week in the background information, I read off that Talzin had two sons. She had Darth Maul and Savage. But the way she's acting in this, though, she's not acknowledging that this is her son at all, like, when she meets him. And Savage doesn't seem to recognize her either, like a mom. So I don't know if it's a cultural thing where she gives birth and then sends him away, and she's just a mother's figure to all the men in the tribe and to the whole clan. But I also have to keep in mind that Son of Dathomir came out 3 years after this episode. So it might not have just been something that they had, but I feel like Dave Filoni has such a good grip on all of these stories that he would have known this soon, their relationships together. So, like, that moment was just really weird to me when she meets Savage and she's like, what a nice specimen. And I'm like, that's your baby.
Yeah. I mean, once again, they're humanoid. We don't know how they work. She might give birth. She might not even give birth, like, body-wise. You know, it might be some bubble boiling trouble type thing, and all of a sudden there's 40 little eggs in a circle, you know? And they just pop out. And it's like, yeah, little Darth Maul's running around, and they just cart them off to Maul Town.
Oh my god, they'd be so cute because they wouldn't have horns. They would just have little nubbins.
Little nubs, just like Rosemary's at the end of Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, that's not cute anymore.
And they gotta put little mittens on his hands so he doesn't scratch himself with his claws.
Yes.
So, highly recommend Rosemary's Baby, the book and the movie. It's some evil shit.
Well. That's all I have for my very long act two.
Wow. Yeah, it's funny that you say, that's all I have. Yeah, okay, you sure you don't have any more?
I'm good, but I have to say, that was probably one of my favorite bits to write so far in JGS and Jedi, other than my recaps of Rex for a season.
It's just funny that sometimes the longer your summary is, it's with the, you know, the less stuff that happens.
True. I mean, it was like,
I'm not critical of that. I'm just pointing it out.
Well, I could have done this two ways. I could have been like, and she does three events and she beats the crap out of them and she beats Savage. Or I could have given you a Hunger Games play by play.
Right. Exactly. I'm not going to sit here and go, you know, Hope, you really ought to, you know, you don't have to be so creative for these podcasts. You might want to dial back on the creativity a little bit. It's kind of antithetical to podcasting.
Okay.
So, yes, I always encourage Hunger Games summaries.
Next week, I'm just going to be like, Act 1, something happens. Act 2, something else happens. Act 3, something happens.
It all ties up. The end.
Yes. All right, so Act 3. It's voodoo time in Mother Talzin's House of the Dark Side. They perform a witch roll, transforming Savage's lean Darth Maul-like form into a massive, hulking man of power and no personality. They pretty much just shoot him up with dark side steroids. Mother Talzin wakes Savage up.
I just want to point out that in Hope's note, she wrote a hunking man.
Yeah,
I just realized. Little Freudian slip there, Hope.
A hunking, hulking man of power. There was a moment where he sat up afterwards, and I was just like, whoa, look at those muscles.
To the dark side.
To the dark side, fangirls, let's go. Mother Talzin wakes up Savage from his trance, and the first thing he does is strangle Ventress. She commands him to release her, and he follows her command. Releasing her. That was a weird sentence. Ventress tells the other Night Sisters to bring in the prisoner, and it's freaking adorable cinnamon roll Feral. Ventress says to kill Feral, and Feral pleads with his brother, and Savage hesitates at first, and then he straight up snaps Feral's neck. So, in this case, bros do not come before hoes.
No.
I felt so clever when I read that. I was just like, I'm so clever, I high-fived myself. Savage is completely under Ventress's control. And Mother Talzin gives her baby a late Christmas present of an enchanted blade to go kill some dudes with. She's mommy of the year. Mother Talzin flies to Raxus and meets up with Count Dooku. She presents him to Savage and says, hey, he's strong, as he is as good at killing dudes. I know, I literally just watched him crush his brother's throat. And Dooku is like, cool, that's cool. Still, Dooku wants to test Savage's skills. He wants Savage to attack the Jedi Temple on Edith on Davaron. It's not just the temple, it's being used as an outpost for the Republic in the war. Savage heads out to Davaron. He arrives on the planet. Jedi Master Halsey, his Padawan Nox, and their clone troopers are like, man, who the heck is that guy? Oh my god, he's killing us! And Savage easily plows through the clone troopers and faces the two Jedi. He quickly kills Master Halsey, leaving the little Padawan all by himself. Yeah, that doesn't end well for the kid. He's dead pretty darn fast. Savage Skypes Dooku to let him know that he got the temple, and Dooku is like, damn, son, that was really fast. Well, I guess come home and I'll train you in some evil ways. Dooku also drops some hard rule of two of the Sith stuff. He wants to train up Savage so one day Savage and Dooku can take out Lord Sidious. So there's that. The end.
Of course he does.
Of course he does.
Once he finds out he's strong, he's just like, oh yeah, I can use this.
Yeah. So what'd you think of Act 3?
I like it. Now the dominant color was green in a lot of these scenes. So we're back to like nice just primary colors all over. I love that in these Clone Wars. And I love the scene where Savage is kneeling down to Dooku, but he just gives a little flick of the eyes back to Mother Talzin.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying like, yeah. Whatever.
Not really.
I'm your boy, Dooku. Whatever. I like that. I thought that was pretty cool. It was very convenient of him to just land in the battle and just like, oh, here's a spot I gotta land at. Oh, take out the Jedi. I like, though, that he was just shoving droids out of the way. He was just like, yeah, get out of here. I got this.
It really had nothing to do with like anything. He was just killing. It didn't matter if they were droid or Jedi or clones.
Yeah, just whatever was in his way, he just took it out, you know. But that's about the only notes I had on this one. I mean, we just got like origin story for potentially a new big bad. We'll see how that goes, but that's basically what it sort of plays out like.
All right, here we go. After I chew my crunch berries, hold on. So I just put 12 crunch berries in my mouth, and then you were like, I'm done.
I just finished off a box of generic fake Captain Crunch, so.
That's actually what this is. This is like the Kroger brand, store brand Captain Crunch. And I actually like it way better because it's just a touch softer than regular Captain Crunch.
The ones I had were smaller, so they didn't destroy your mouth like regular Captain Crunch. Because I eat it just like candy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it in milk, but like I remember in the old days when I did, Captain Crunch would soften up a little bit if you left it in your milk a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But if you didn't let it soften up in the milk, it would just like it's like hot pizza burning the roof of your mouth. Except this was just like would just sloth off all the first few layers of skin in your mouth.
What Captain Crunch are you eating?
Just the regular old peanut butter Captain Crunch.
Oh my god, that sounds like terrible. Did you buy it from like?
No, it was worth it. It's delicious.
Did you buy it from like a man who sells lava with Captain Crunch? I've never had that experience with Captain Crunch where it's ripping off the top layer of my skin.
Well, yeah, I'm blowing it up a little bit, but that's basically what
that's
it would do. It would definitely braid the inside of your mouth.
I think that's called a food allergy, hon. You might want to check that out.
Oh, it was a physical effect of the crunch. Maybe it was because when we were little kids, we used to just shove our mouth full of it, too, and be like, rah, rah, rah. So it's like having your mouth full of
it. But it kind of gets that film in your mouth.
Well, that, yeah. Yeah, but okay. I mean, like, when they're like, dry, and you just put the milk on them, and they haven't got, because Captain Crunch in milk will get the top layer of it soaks up the milk, and it almost gets spongy and slimy, and it's delicious. And but if you don't let it get to that point, it can be too rough on the. Maybe I just have a weak ass inside of my mouth. Maybe the skin's, maybe I'm thin skinned on the roof of my mouth. But yeah, old Captain Crunch with the bigger crunches. I don't want to say crunch berries. Just regular Captain Crunch would definitely do some damage. I don't know. Listeners, that's where the listeners come in. Tell me if I'm crazy or tell me if you've had the same. Maybe it was just the Captain Crunch when we were kids. Maybe it's different these days.
I like the Captain Crunch, the store brand generic one, because it's just a touch softer than normal Captain Crunch.
Uh-huh.
But I have weak enamels on my teeth, so if something's like really too hard, it really hurts sometimes to bite into things.
Uh-huh.
It becomes God's cereal when it does get that like spongy outside, but that crunch in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so good. All right, here we go. This is where I start having some beefs about this episode.
Uh-uh.
And it's based on the fact that I know Savage's story to the end because I have finished Clone Wars, and I know what he will do, and I know what he will become in the future. So when I watched this episode for the first time, I remember thinking how cool it was. I really liked this episode because Mother Talzin is pretty much made a Frankenstein monster. And looking back, this is where I really stopped really liking Savage, and it's when they turn him into a monster. Because he is such an interesting character before all this with his relationship with Beryl. I wish they hadn't turned him into a monster and ripped out his personality. They pretty much gave him like a character lobotomy, and he just becomes really boring after this. I would have much rather had seen him willingly form an alliance with Ventress and then make his own choices and then grow in that way. I think he would have become more of a Darth Maul-like character and had more personality and could have made his choices. But instead, they turned him into a walking meat bag with a lightsaber, and I wish they just didn't do that. I wish they'd stayed away from that.
They're evil. I mean, they took away his humanity or his Dathomirity or whatever. You know, whatever the name of the race is, but they stole it from him, and if they left him maybe with too much personality, he wouldn't be able to be as much of a tool of revenge as they want him to be.
You know? I think that would have made an interesting story, though. Like maybe
it would have, but it would have made it, you know, because he might have felt like betrayed by the sisters and betrayed them and stuff, which is probably exactly why he's sort of a Manchurian candidate now, you know, that sort of thing, where he's a programmed robot, you know. They took out that element of it because that would risk the revenge. Or what if he liked Dooku better and is just like, hey, Dooku, yeah, they sent me to kill you, you know, but hey, I like working for you. Let's rule the galaxy and kill, and, you know. So maybe they just don't want to give him too much intelligence because he could turn on them, or he could tip their hand.
And I do get that, but like, you know, me, I always prefer like character work over plot. Mm-hmm. And so I like to think of like what stories could have actually happened. Like maybe him and like Ventress realized that she liked having him around, and they became partners or something. Or he, you know, like got to see the outside galaxy for the first time, and he was like, I'd rather be out here instead of working for you. And like went out on his own. Like there's just so much they could have done with this character, and they completely lobotomize him. And I didn't mind this episode the first time I watched it, but looking back on it, like that's a big, massive problem of this episode for me.
Well, it makes sense to me that they lobotomized him, but I don't think it was a good idea story-wise, because Darth Maul had such a short, like aborted presence in episode one, but everybody really liked him, that, you know, here's your chance to expand on him, and they basically just make, you know, a Terminator.
Yeah.
an angry, you know, a mixture of a raging bull and a Terminator. And
oh, go on.
I think they're doing that because, like he was saying, you know, George Lucas wanted to bring back Darth Maul, and they were like, let's not invest too much in this guy because we might be doing Darth Maul soon enough, you know?
And that's the other part of this. Like, Darth Maul is such, like, you know, I didn't like him at first and stuff like that. And I for a long time, I didn't agree with them bringing back Maul.
But they definitely worked on his character once he came back. He's definitely had quite a character arc between two whole series, so.
And it was Rebels that made me really like Maul. Like, that was the first time I was like, I'm in for Maul. Like, I'm ready for this. I love this cockroach. I love him. So it was Rebels. And I'm sitting here going, even if they didn't do that, like, when they do bring him Maul into the series, him and Savage could have had a really cool partnership. Or, like, maybe, like, if Savage had his mind about him, he could have been like, I don't want to serve you, and I didn't want to serve the Sith, and I don't want to serve Ventress. Okay, bye.
Yeah.
So, like I just feel like it was such a missed opportunity here. But, like, they do really play up that Frankenstein element. Like, Savage, when he walks and talks, he even moves stiff like a Frankenstein monster. Like, he kind of lumbers. He doesn't bend his knees. They just kind of, like, chomp, chomp, chomp. Like, when he's walking off the ship to meet Dooku, he's just, like, he has to move his whole body to move his legs. So, there was one point I had to laugh, though, during Savage's transformation, because it reminded me of a comic I found in our store, Dollar Bin. Our
Is
comic
it called
store
NFL dollar. Super Pro?
Yeah! That's exactly what it was!
The guys from Back to the Bins are going to have something to say about this episode, because that's a comic book. I believe it's NFL Super Pro, that everybody's after them to cover that comic, and nobody wants to do it, I think.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, because I got it from my nephew. I saw it. My nephew loves football. But there's a story in it where the friend of the quarterback takes steroids, And he turns into this huge, gross, hunking, multi-muscled monster and becomes, like, a stupid beast. And he has a heart attack from, like, the sheer weight of his body crushing his heart. And at the end of it, they were like, see, little Johnny, that's why you don't take steroids. And they were like, wow, thanks, Tom Brady, or whatever. But, like, that's what that entire scene reminded me of. And I was waiting for, like, some little kid to show up and just be like, wow, that's why I don't take steroids. But, yeah. That's the exact comment. My nephew loved it.
He's also like 9. NFL Super Pro made it into Jay Guys and Jedi.
Yeah, before it made it and back to the bins. Oh, anyway. I like that Ventress right away starts feeding Savage the ways of the dark side. Like Filoni says in the episode Vitred, I don't think she realizes that she's treating Savage the same way Dooku treated her, but also the dark side is really all she knows. So I thought that was an interesting moment, because I was like, oh, you're acting like your master.
I don't think,
like,
she cares, yeah. That's what she knows, so that's what she does.
Once again, I wrote, I would much rather have this story of Ventress working with a willing Savage. I wrote that again. It's a bit dorky that Dooku walks like Savage, or Savage walks like Dooku, like after he goes to the temple, and he's like walking and following Dooku around. His hands are behind his back, just like Dooku.
He's really cute. A little dog.
I know. He's learning etiquette. Like, pretty soon he's going to learn how to drink with his pinky out. It's kind of cute. They're nerds. I love these nerds. So right away, Dooku compares Savage's power to Maul's, saying that he will one day be as great as Maul. This, to me, was a very important moment, because we know that Savage is always going to be in Maul's shadow, and he's always going to be lesser to Maul. So it kind of sets up, like, a story element right there of, like, Savage as a character will, like, never quite be as great as Maul, but he'll always be living in that looming shadow of his big brother. So I really liked that moment, because it set up a really good element. All right, ready for my other beef of this episode?
Yeah.
So I wish they would have saved Savage attacking the temple for next week. For one, it's such a quick little scene. It's over in about a blink of an eye. It only lasts maybe a minute and a half. I wish they would have ended the episode with Talzin giving Savage to Dooku. That would have left you about 3 to 4 minutes of extra time, and I would have rather have spent that time with Savage before he got transformed into the monster. This goes back to me wanting more of that Dathomir society. I would have rather had more background on the Man Village, more Savage and Feral, and that kind of stuff. And it's so... The reason I want that, because it's not a big blow when Savage kills Feral, because we really don't know them. But if they had given us, like, that, like, 3-minute chunk of time to the beginning, and we got to see time of Feral and Savage and, like, built, like, a little scene, it would have been a much more heartbreaking death.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just really wanted more time there. And at the end, like, after, like, she gives Savage, like, it's pretty much just like, oh, here's Dooku, and he's killing some Jedi and stuff like that. When they could have just put that, like, 30 seconds, beginning of the next week episode, Savage arrives, kills some Jedi, and then you go into where the Jedi are like, whoa, this guy just killed us. Who's this guy? And we'll send Obi-Wan and Anakin after him. I don't know. I just rather would have spent that, like, last 3 minutes and put it back into the beginning of the episode and had a scene with, like, Savage. And even if it was something like 30 seconds of, like, you know, they're like, oh, I hear one of the sisters is coming, and, like, Feral knocks something over, and all the other brothers are just like, oh, look at Feral. And Savage is like, hey, I'm going to rip your fucking heads off. And they're like, oh, God. Like, that would have been just, like, you know, established more of their relationship together.
Uh-huh.
And I would have rather had that time just to kind of, like, give us just a little 3 extra minutes of Man Dathomir society.
Yeah, because the him killing the Jedis was, like, kind of fast and just sort of wedged in there at the end.
I mean, it's cool, and it shows how powerful he is.
It could have been. I would have rather seen it a little bit longer and seen him kicking a little more, you know, being a little more of a badass, taking some more time to do it.
And you easily have, like, 30 to 45 seconds of, like, chanting, of, like, Night Sister chanting and stuff. They could have been, like, click over, click, like, Uduva, and then, like, swirling powers, and got that done in 30 seconds. But no, it's like a 2-minute scene of them transforming Savage. So, I mean, I just wish that there was a lot of parts of this episode I wish they used their time better and focused on different stories, because there were certain stories I wanted more than others. So, yeah. Yeah, that's all I got for this episode. All
right, you want me to give it a number?
Yes. What did you think?
I like this one. Definitely not as much as the last one. I agree with you. There's definitely some, could have used some more character work, and I could have use some more time in the Dathomir man village. That sounded sketchy. But I still really liked it. I love the color scheme of it and the look of it. Not sure. At first I was like, oh, that's kind of a neat light speeder that Ventress has, and then I'm like, wow, it's really over designed.
Yeah.
It's really, really too impressive. But I'm giving this one an 8. It's down a whole point from the last one. I still like it a lot, but it doesn't have the novelty of the last one that kicked it up to a 9 for me. And Savage is okay. But basically for now, as far as we know, he's just a steroided up version of Darth Maul.
Do you quick question? Because I just thought of this. Do you feel, because this is supposed to be setting up Savage as a big bad, do you get that big bad feeling from him?
No.
Okay.
I don't get much of a feeling at all from him because they didn't develop him too much as a character. He's just sort of a stock, you know, I mean, maybe that's what they're going for. These guys are just they're sort of like the clones of Dathomir, you know. They're
just,
so they're all interchangeable up to the point of where some of them are stronger than others. They definitely have different personalities, but those were just sort of sketched in, you know, to add story elements. You didn't really feel them.
Yeah. I didn't notice the majority of them are, like, yellow. There was a couple, like, orange ones. So I'm wondering if, like, a red Dathomir man is, like, Maul is rare.
Or he's more developed or something. That you don't get red until you don't turn lobster color till you... I don't know if those are tattoos or if they're just, there's skin coloration either, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't like the yellow ones. The red ones look a lot, the Darth Maul red looks a lot scarier.
Yeah,
than,
I do
than
like
the yellow ones.
There's one guy that was orange. He was the one that was deemed too short that Ventress kicked out, but he was very orange. And I actually kind of liked his design, too, because everybody else was yellow, and he was the only orange one. So he really stood out in my mind. And I think Brother Viscus, the leader of the men, was orange, too, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But I get the feeling, like, yellow Dathomirians are very common, while orange or red are, like, a little bit more rare.
Uh-huh. Like red M&Ms.
Yeah. For me, I like this episode. I've loved it the first time I watched it. But after finishing the Clone Wars, I still have a lot of things I love about it. I mean, there's still a lot. I really enjoy this episode a lot. I need way more about the Dathomir Society with the Man Tribe and stuff. And I like Pharaoh. I do like him. He's a cinnamon roll, and I love him. And I wish we got more of his relationship with Savage so Pharaoh's death would be more impactful. But we also get to see Ventress kicking ass and taking names, which is just always fun for me to see. I just always love that. I wish if they would have tailored this a bit more towards character development of Savage and Peril, this might have been easily a perfect score for me. But after going back and watching it and after completing the Clone Wars, I had to talk some points from it. But still, it's a really, really great episode this week, built off of last week. And originally I had it as an 8 because I think last week's was an 8.5. But as I talked about it, I took off a quarter of a point, just a little bit. Because I don't think it's a full 8, so I gave it a 7.75 out of 10.
Ooh, just under me.
Yeah, just barely. I think I was under you last week, too. I think I had I think I was like an 8 or an 8.5, and you had a 9, so I was just barely under you, too. So, whoa!
You should.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback at either iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page.
And what's cracking me up is, oh, it's sort of like the Jay Guys and Jedi version of that's what she said.
I know.
You don't even have to say anything. You just have to go, ooh, and it just means, yeah, take the dirtiest possibility of what I just said.
There was something that you said that I had to hold back on. God, it was in, like, in Act 3 you said something, and I just was, like, laughing silently. On the set, and I don't remember what it was, but it sounded so dirty in my mind. I wish I don't remember what you said, though, so. This week's feedback is from our episode for Heroes on Both Sides. So, take it away, Chris.
All right, and this feedback is from Aaron Henley. And Aaron Henley says, initial pre-hearing thoughts for the episode. I so wish more had been done to show the Separatist point of view. Why did they initially break from the Republic? Why did they turn to Dooku in the first place? I'd always hoped that we would get an episode where we can see a man on the street working in a garage or something, getting a call to arms as he kisses his wife, hugs his kids, and heads to battle. And we see him with the other regular people, and then we see an approaching line of white with Jedi in the lead, and suddenly go, oh crap, this isn't a Republic force defending their home, it's separatists. That would be a neat scene.
Yeah.
As Dave Filoni mentioned in his commentary, and this is one thing I remember from seeing all of them, is that there were heroes on both sides of the war. It wasn't all black and white. I just wish that we had seen more of that, because all we see are the droids and the Moidians and all the bad guys we know are bad, and not just the people who the Separatists look up to. Heck, even Spider-Admiral Trench could have been a really great guy, but we only know him as a bad guy because he was written to be a bad guy, and he was written on the bad side. But yeah, he's like any other general. If he was on the good guy side, we would have been cheering for General Spider-Man.
I don't know, because, like, if you think about Clone Wars, like, Admiral Yularen is a good guy, but in Rebels, he's clearly with the Empire, so...
Right, yeah, but that's the thing, is they're generals are generals, you know?
Yeah.
The captain of a ship is a captain of a warship, but we only knew him because he was written as a bad guy. So much opportunity, but I'm glad that... what we got with Lux and his mom. Oh, and Lux and Ahsoka sitting in a tree. So on to the next episode. Yeah, Lux and Ahsoka definitely were sitting in a tree. Space K-I-S-S-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm. And then just a quick little thing. Paul C. Kelly also said, listening to this, I really hope Netflix keeps this on as well. I'm on season 5 now, lol.
It looks like he'll probably make it, right?
Yeah, as of right now, it's still on Netflix. I mean, yeah. I watched it today, so I assume that they extended their license and stuff. So everybody was freaking out prematurely, and so they just had to renew the license. So to my knowledge, it looks like we are still having it on Netflix. I guess to answer something in Aaron's little bit about like why they broke away from the Republic, in the episode Mina said that there were so many corporations and stuff that the Republic kind of became corrupt, and that's why a lot of them left. I think Dooku was just the first person to step up and be like, yeah, sure, I'll lead. I used to be a Jedi, and look at me. I walked away. So that's only my assumption. So, oh my god, I'm so ready to eat this thing. If you're wondering why we're about to eat some candy, a little while ago, Chris was all like, man, American Kit Kats suck. And our great friend Dario, who is also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat and Beat It, is a flight attendant. And he sent me and Chris candy from all over the world. But from this one, we're not going across the world. We're just going to California.
Hey, I'll read his note. It says, hey guys, here's your Kit Kats and candy from around the world. This batch of Kit Kats comes from Brazil, along with a few more Chinese dark chocolate ones I had lying around. Menamin wafers are the closest thing you will find to a Kit Kat in Israel. Now, he sent us like a big block of Menamin wafers.
Yeah,
they must buy them in bulk there because he's like, they're vacuum sealed. And there's like... there's a lot of wafers there.
Yeah, there are.
Gaelian biscuits come from Belgium, and the last but not least is the Rocky Road candy bar that is made in my hometown of Hayward, California. Enjoy, Dario. So that's what we're going to eat today.
Yes, we will enjoy it, Dario.
We're going to eat a little part of Dario's hometown.
It smells so good. As you were reading,
I haven't opened mine yet. It's Annabelle's Rocky Road handmade milk chocolate. Coated marshmallows with cashews.
It's
I don't know if
so
that means
soft.
The bar is handmade or if the milk chocolate is handmade, but...
Oh my god.
Now, Dario has hinted that it wasn't that good and they just ate it from his hometown. It's got marshmallow in it. I love candy bars with marshmallow in it, so...
It's really soft because it's just marshmallow.
It feels soft.
Be more cashews.
It feels spongy in the... Oh, look at this lumpy, squishy. Oh, dear God, I'm squeezing it, and I can see the marshmallow coming out through the cracks of it.
I thought there would be more cashews, but they just taste like they're kind of crumbled on the top. But it's really sweet.
It's super sweet. I'm gonna have to eat like a third of this.
Yeah, I can't eat the entire thing because I don't like super sweet stuff. Oh, man.
It's like a Malamar without the cookie at the bottom.
I almost wish there was more cashews so to add like a salty quality to combat this like sweetness of it.
Mm-hmm. It's really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Or like have the like a base layer of like cashews or something.
Well, here's where we're running into the American candies. Is that's where the American taste just sort of and I don't feel I'm not slagging this candy bar. I'm gonna eat the whole thing. But Dario did sort of warn us. He's like, yeah, we eat them because they're from our hometown. That's sort of the reason why. But American taste, to me, a lot of American candy bars just basically taste like different forms of sugar, you know?
Yeah.
Here's some crunchy sugar. Here's some mushy sugar. And I like a little more complexity to it. I like some crunchy, some savoriness or something. You know, that's, I think that a lot of people feel that's why you're seeing a lot of the salted chocolate and stuff like that these days.
Mm. Oh, sea salt chocolate's my favorite. Mm. I love it.
It's a nice complicated, you know, you're not getting just pure or dark chocolate too. It has some bitter to it, you know.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to eat that slowly over the course of like a couple days.
Yeah, or get the beetus.
Oh, yeah. But as always, thank you, Dario. We really appreciate it.
We'll be back to Kit Kats next week of some sort, probably. But
I'm eyeing those wafers.
Yeah, I know. The Belgian, I'm holding it now, the Guylian looks good, too. That looks like a crunchy, it says Belgian chocolate crunchy biscuit, so.
And I had one of the dark chocolate Kit Kats from China earlier today. It was really good.
It says Belgian chocolate with crunchy biscuit filling. Biscuit filling!
I also have one of my other Hawaii treats that he sent me last time. Because he sent me two and I have only had one.
I ate all of mine.
I haven't had the second one. Yeah, you did. I know. I yelled at you a couple episodes
ago. I'm a bad boy.
No, but I had one of them. I still have a couple of dark chocolate Kit Kats, and I can't wait to eat another one again. But yeah, I'm eyeing these. We have to plan
and
ahead.
Just remember, listeners, Dario doesn't have to be the only one sending this candy.
I like bacon. I'll take bacon, always.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you ever make it up to Rochester, we'll get you some pig candy, some bacon candy that we make at our restaurant.
Whoa, that sounds amazing. But if we're going to eat these wafers at some point, we need to plan ahead because I need to cut into this bag to open it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, like with those wafers, I'm definitely going to have to either reseal them up and put them in the freezer or just like give some to Scott 2.0 next door, which I'm sure he won't be opposed to.
Yeah,
because there's a big block of them. It looks like he went to a store, like they sell them like cookies or pastries there. It's just like, all right, give me 2 pounds of the wafers.
Yeah.
Which, nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, old-fashioned Charlie and the Chocolate Factory candy shop style. Maybe that's how they roll in Israel. I don't know how they roll with candy in Israel.
Me neither. That'd be fun to find out. Hey, let's go to Israel.
I know a few people have been there and go there, so maybe I'll ask. We probably have a few listeners who might know.
Jacob and Jedi.
I imagine, actually, the candy situation in Israel is very similar to the candy situation in the United States. I think the two countries are very similar in just general cultural regards.
That just means that next week we'll have to be like, live from Israel, Jedi and Jedi!
We're in the Holy Land to review its candy.
Forget all. What? They just opened up the tomb where Jesus died? Nah, we're just going to go to a candy shop.
Yeah, well, we're staying out of trouble.
All right. Well, I don't have anything else, do you?
No, ma'am.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where we have all the podcasts. Man, I've been a little productive little bastard the last few days. I put out 3 podcasts in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, you have.
Very proud of myself. I put out Jay Guys and Jedi, Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror, and the one, and probably by the time you hear it, it might still be pinned up at twotruefreaks.com, or twotruefreaks Facebook page. Which is a brand new, I think it's Storytellers number 6, where we, you know, the entire episode is just somebody telling a story or stories, where we've gotten the famous Dr. Bill Robinson of the famous Real Life with Bill Robinson stories from Back to the Bins to tell 2 stories through the whole course of it. And it's one of those things where Storytellers doesn't come out on a schedule. so there's no deadline. So I was able to sit for the last couple months and really work on the editing process of it, you know, and really, you know, put it together like you would do, like a more of a production, because it didn't have to be out at a certain time. But yeah, tutufreaks.com, tutufreaks on Facebook. We got a tutufreaks cantina where you can off our main page where you can go just talk about anything nerd, and we got a Twitter on tutufreaks that Gene, the podcasting machine, runs. Ba-dum-ba-ba-dum-bum. Gene. And yeah, I was thinking of Gene, the podcasting machine, because one of my heroes, Chuck Barris, the guy who did the Gong Show, recently passed away.
I saw that.
A few weeks ago, as of you're hearing this. And he was one of my idols. If anybody ever gets a chance to see the movie Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, directed by George Clooney, but written by Charlie Kaufman, the guy who wrote Being John Malkovich, Adaption. Very good movie. Very, very good movie about the making of, you know, Chuck Barris' showbiz career and his career as a deadly assassin for the CIA.
What?
You gotta see the movie. It's based on his biography. He figured his biography was too boring as it was, so he added a subplot of him being a plausible subplot of him being a hired assassin for the CIA, which is plausible. It lines up with like his travels to other countries and stuff like that. It's amazing. It's an amazing movie the way they do it. And you would like it because it's very stagey, where a lot of the scene changes happen on screen. The camera will move, and the set will disassemble and reassemble into the next set, and they'll just do the next scene.
Can I just say, I just imagined Cad Bane as the head of a game show, and then just like goes out and just shoots people.
Yeah, you lose.
Actually, that just reminded me, not like the old Prez, but recently DC did a new run of Prez, and it was, you know, about an 18-year-old who becomes the president of the United States, but she's voted in through Twitter. Well, there's a part where they're having this game show where illegal immigrants can compete to try and become citizens, and they have to go through these, like, very dangerous, like, things, and this one little boy is like getting through, and he's like almost dies several times in this game, and finally the last thing, he makes it there on time, but he finds a gun, and they're like, all right, your final test, you have to shoot yourself. And he's like, what? And they're like, do you want your parents to come with you to the United States? And he shoots himself in the leg and he wins. That's kind of what you just reminded me of.
Oh, awesome.
So okay. Yeah, teacherfreaks.com.
Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me on Twitter in two places. I run our Twitter at JFNJedi, and you can also find me at Hope Molinex, and I'm also the news writer for What the Fangirl, where I write news and stuff. And sometimes I write editorials
and sometimes
stuff.
Even draw comics.
And on the occasion, I draw comics for the first time ever, so well. Yeah. But yeah, you can find me on there, and come check me out on whatthefangirl.com. And when we finish up this season, I'll finally be able to finish my season 3 recap of Clone Wars.
Yay!
Yay. I just didn't want to watch the episodes twice. Ooh. So, yeah. Well, that's all I have. Chris, do you have anything else?
I got nothing. Nothing.
Well, go outside, open your door, walk outside, go pull your Frankenstein monster back in, and just tuck him in and tell him that he's beautiful. And hope he doesn't kill you. Bye.
Good night. Nighty night.
Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies hit the floor.
Here we go.
I'm just getting low.
How low, girl?
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Not one. Nothing wrong with me.
Two.
Nothing wrong with me.
Three.
Nothing wrong with me.
Four.
Nothing wrong with me.
One.
Something's got to give.
Two.
Something's got to give.
Three.
Something's got to give.
Now kill the goat.